Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Influential She. This is our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. And I am Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt. And this week, we're going to be talking about the high leverage practice of connection. This is a practice that Mel and I have spent a lot of time talking about, and something that we wish we had been advised in a different way in our early life on what it means to develop deep, meaningful connections beyond the surface.
I think a lot of times when you read today about what you need to do to build this network of people, it's more along the line of being at every social event, handing out business cards, being present, getting a huge social media following, where we see it as a lot deeper than that. It's really building, as we would say in our byline, if you have been reading some of our high leverage practices, about building respectful and meaningful relationships with yourself as well as others.
You know, I think it's about early on getting in touch with, what are your passions? Where is it that you want to influence? And being more thoughtful about the kind of people that would be helpful to know and have relationship with, a true connection so that you can link arms and get something done together.
You know, I have to be really candid and honest, because I think early in my career, I really felt it was important to make a name for myself, that I had to be really independent and be able to do it on my own. I wasn't good at reaching out, you know, to other people, whether it was, you know, in a working environment or maybe socially, because it was sort of this inner drive that I thought, wow, I've got to prove who I am instead of, you know, trying to link arms, as you said. I think you know, that's something that we visited about before. And
well,
I have regrets about that.
Well, and it was so much about, yep, to your point, Mel, where you were talking about, let's get into a room and hand out a lot of business cards. And this is like an old school word,
yeah,
for people who are listening to this, but to expand your Rolodex,
yeah,
which nobody even probably knows what that means anymore. But it was to have all kinds of names.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, we can see that, yes, it's helpful, but mm-hmm, what really can accelerate your influence is spending some key time with people to develop a more trusting connection that is respectful and is based on, I see you as a person, mm-hmm, and like who you are, not just the position you hold. And this doesn't mean that you have to spend a ton of time with all these different people and mm-hmm, that everybody's this really super tight relationship in your life. But it's talking about, and because these deep connections can happen in a very short period of time, but it's about being more intentional to get to know someone really.
Yeah. And I think just spending that time in reaching out and saying, not just the superficial kind of talk, but actually knowing more about them as a person, whether it's their family, the things that they like to do. We all like to know that other people really want to get to know us. It's a simple thing to do, but I have to be really honest. I was not coached to do that early on. It was to keep things more at what I thought was a professional level. And boy, when I learned later, that was really helpful to me in my professional career in the last few years, was getting to know people on that personal level with true intention. Again, with getting something accomplished in the end by having common interests and goals.
Yeah, and let's be clear. We're not talking about trying to manipulate people to being connected to you.
That's a good point.
We're talking about, in order to have fun and to accelerate your influence, it's finding people that may be very, very different than you, that you have enough interest together to put some more energy behind something that you want to get done. Mm-hmm. And it can be a lot of fun along the way. I think about this person that you know that you're connected on Baptist hymns, aren't,
yeah,
you, Mel?
Yeah, I
am. Tell that story, because I think it's such a great story.
So a good friend of mine who I
you didn't know very well.
I did not know him at all. It was our first really professional meeting. And we were together at a dinner with another colleague of his. And we were talking about something in the education world. And you know how you start making those initial, hey, where are you from? What's your background? And he was telling me that he grew up as the son of a Baptist minister. And I said, oh my gosh, I said, you know, I'm a Baptist girl. I jokingly said, I can sing every Baptist hymn that there is. In fact, I'm the church organist and so forth. And he just starts to laugh. So kicks it off. He starts singing. I think to this day we've joked, I think it was How Great Thou Art, if that means anything to any of you out there. And I as soon as he did that, I would pick up on the second line. And to this day, every time we run into each other or if we're in a social situation, our connection are Baptist hymns. Now, that might seem silly in some ways, but it has been a long-lasting friendship just because we got to know each other on that one personal connection. We've used it in social situations and meeting other people because it shows us that we're really, I think,
human.
This human side.
Real people.
There were real people that had, you know, he has this amazing business and, you know, amazing connections across the country, but we can still connect on the Baptist hymn background is what we have. So,
you know, I just love that story because to me, it really is at the essence of what we're talking about, you know, Mel was sharing something real about herself that connected with another person in something that was real about them.
Right.
And then it became authentic and a way to open up a new line of conversation, mm-hmm. which, you know, has, you know, helped in different areas of being influential in your life.
Yeah, very much. And has been, many different ways I've been able to use that. And I think at this point, my being able to be real and understand that those things mean and make a difference to people has been really helpful in a growing experience for me in many, many different ways. And I think, Deborah, we both share that common understanding of that was probably been even more in the political world that you have had to play in a lot. And then I did, you know, I dabbled in as well in my previous role. But how critically important it was to get to know people on that human side so that then when there were decisions that or controversial issues, you could still have a common respect for each other, a common understanding where people are coming from, where if you don't know somebody and you're only going off of what they're voting on, that's harder to understand unless you have a mutual relationship amongst each other.
And you know what? I think this whole connection idea, well, it's certainly easy when there's people that you like.
Oh, yeah.
And you're philosophically aligned with and you can share a Baptist hymn with.
Right.
That's when it's easy. It's not as easy to have respectful connection when it's someone that you right. don't really like as much. Maybe you really don't even like the issues, but you also are not connected as a person mm-hmm. in who they are or someone you would hang out with. There still is a place to develop a connection.
That's right.
By asking a question about what meaning does this have for you? Tell me what you're afraid of. Tell me what mm-hmm. is on your mind in relationship to this. And that sharing back will give you a stronger connection to even work through some of the tough stuff.
Yeah. And I think we've both have found that that was really valuable in that I learned way too late in life. I wish I had learned earlier that we want to make sure that we share with women, regardless of where you're at in your space. But I think in particular for those who are younger, that there is real value in that human touch that we have that we don't want to lose through whether or not it's, and I think sometimes in social media it can be either hidden or it can be brought out. I think there can be value as well in, you know, sharing that as well. So don't want to seem like we are, you know, geriatric and not believe in the social media realm because I use a lot too. And maybe it's been a great way to share ourselves, but I do think that there is something important about that connection.
Well, and speaking of, you know, really dealing with some tough stuff, we had an opportunity to meet someone in Washington or to be with someone in Washington, D.C. It's someone I just met, but someone that you knew, Mel, and to really talk about how she used connections to do some pretty extraordinary things.
Yeah. This is Nancy Siegel, who we had a chance to visit with, and she currently is the executive director of government relations for education testing services, but has a wealth of background of really fascinating things that she did. She was also the associate vice president for ACT, working with federal relations, which again was really important in her dealing with connections in the DC office. She served as a legislative director for the PTA Association, and was special assistant and counsel to Commissioner Paul Miller at the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I think she talks a little bit about that with us as we visited with her. Another thing that I think was fascinating in our conversation with her is that she worked with President Bill Clinton and on some really important issues dealing with the employment of individuals with disabilities.
And she's going to talk about
that
a little bit.
She's going to talk about that because that was a really, I know for her was a really powerful piece of work that she did and something that has been really valuable to her. And then following that, she was counsel to the late Senator Edward Kennedy in the Senate Health and Education, Labor and Pensions Committee. So a lot of amazing things she did, but the thing that's been woven through all of this work has been how she used connection to be able to accomplish a lot of the things that she did.
So here's a little snippet from our conversation with her where she's really talking about digging into, and it may not make a lot of sense in seeming like connection because we're just laying some groundwork for the story. She's going to talk about how she was involved in the changing litigation around the issues of women and weight, like how much you weigh, as flight attendants. So let's hear from Nancy Siegel.
I was counsel to the union in fighting to eliminate weight standards for flight attendants. And the legal basis, because even today, employers can have all sorts of requirements that we might not agree with. They might say, you know, I'm not going to hire you because I don't like the color of your eyes, or I don't like the way your nose looks, or I don't like your hairstyle. And really, the only way you can challenge those sort of requirements is that if the requirement somehow violates a federal law or a state law. And in this case, we brought cases that were based on the argument that the weight standards were discriminating on the basis of sex, even though they applied to men as well. They were a little more stringent for women. When you looked at women and men's weight metropolitan life health tables, so the men's requirements on those health tables would fit into the medium frames, where the women's requirements fit into the small frames.
Okay, that's fascinating.
So there was a discrepancy there. We also claimed that they were discriminatory on the basis of age, because you were talking a little bit about this before this conversation, that some of the changes that women go through, and that as women age, they have a biological propensity to gain weight. So you were penalizing women who were older by holding them to these strict weight requirements. And then it also discriminated on the basis of disability, because there's certain disabilities that might cause one to gain weight, or medication associated with those disabilities. Mm-hmm. So we were able to settle both of those cases, thankfully, and those were the last weight requirements in the industry. And weight requirements really felt like, I mean, maybe they're more out there, but it felt like the last vestige of discrimination. I mean, early on, you know, you had to be a woman to be a flight attendant. You couldn't be married. They could fire you. They could fire you if you had kids. So there were a lot of ways in which women were really fighting for their livelihood. And then the weight was sort of, you know, the one thing that was still left. So it was, that was very satisfying legal issue to work on.
Wow, what a story. You know, makes me think, we've come a long way, baby. You know, it's just hard to even imagine that there was those sorts of parameters put around for women. And I think I would have been angry if I had known about it. I guess I did, but didn't. So, you know, that it's really fascinating what she was able to do within that period of time.
And that would not have happened without her having these strong professional connections.
True.
That people trusted her enough to start to wade into this very tricky ground in changing something forever. What's interesting is, you know, when we were talking to her, she even goes further to talk about how she was anticipatory in thinking about the connections that were needed to build a stronger platform to influence this. So let's listen again to Nancy's story.
I did always follow my passions. And even with the weight cases, when I was working at the flight attendants union, nobody told me, you know, work on these. Like, I could have ignored them, you know, and I could have put minimal effort into the EEOC, into the US Air case. The sole practitioner, I mean, I basically came to the union and said, look, the union could really make a difference by helping out with this case and becoming co-plaintiffs with the sole practitioner, in part because I saw that it really went to the heart of what the flight attendants were seeking, which is to be viewed as professionals. You know, so many of their battles had to do with initially the profession being viewed as models, or they're just to entertain the male passengers. And so, you know, the fact that they had lower wages or you know, they had poor working conditions was in part, well, of course, because these attractive women are here just to meet a husband. You know, there were just a lot of myths and stereotypes tied up with the flight attendant profession. So I knew that eliminating the weight standards was a critical part of elevating the flight attendant profession, even though nobody was telling me this from the outside.
You know, so Nancy talked about how personally satisfying it was to be able to accomplish what she did, but
think of those connections.
I know she used those really important professional connections that she had to get the work done. It's kind of, you know, it's what we talked about before, that these weren't surface things that she had connected about. These were really deep-seated connections that had helped her to accomplish something really critically important. And so, you know, she really exemplifies how valuable it was that she had, you know, made these meaningful relationships with people.
Well, and the only way you can really get something extraordinary done, you know, you accelerate your influence when you're willing to develop these trustworthy connections with other people. And that means also showing part of you. And, you know, I think that's part of what you were talking about earlier, right, Mel, where you said, we, you know, we're trying to hold ourselves tight. We were right. interested in what's in it for me, really. Mm-hmm. And just trying to, you know, build my own self up instead of how am I seen and my talents when I'm actually reaching across and developing connection with someone else and we can start to do things together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, Nancy further went on to talk about how she worked with the Clinton administration on, you know, pretty incredible discrimination case. So listen to this clip about Nancy using multiple connections in multiple arenas.
President Clinton was interested in having a executive order that banned discrimination on the basis of genetic discrimination. Genetic information. So I worked with others throughout the federal government. We had people from HHS involved and people from Department of Labor, Department of Justice. And we drafted an executive order that prohibited discrimination on the basis of genetic information. Executive orders only apply to federal employees. So President Clinton signed that. And you might wonder, like, is this really an issue? During that period of time, Burlington Northern Railroad had started denying workers' comp claims of some of their employees who had a genetic marker, and they claimed that that genetic marker for some particular thing was linked to carpal tunnel. And so they argued that it wasn't the job that caused the problem that you're having. It is this genetic marker that you have, that you were born with. So it's not our fault. You know, it's one of those things where bad news sometimes can generate good law. But we could point to that and say, this is where things are headed. We want to make sure that no individual is discriminated against in the workplace and also with health insurance because of, their genetics. So President Clinton signed that. That actually is, that's from the signing ceremony.
No,
that
wonderful
photo. Then Senator Kennedy wanted to draft a law that would also apply to the federal sector on the same thing. So that's when I worked for Senator Kennedy. I worked very closely with his health staff. I was on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. And we drafted a law. 8 years later, it passed, called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, GINA.
So I think what's interesting about this story on her genetic discrimination case is that it took 8 years to bring that to fruition. Now, the kind of connections that you need to make that happen, to be tenacious enough to see something through for 8 years, that does not happen unless you've built trust and deeper connected relationships with people. And so I think Nancy's story just really shows the power of what can be done.
And she talks about this power. I think you're going to enjoy this next clip.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes. She actually calls it matchmaking. So we might, you know what, at first when she said that, I was thinking about matchmaking in the sense of romantic relationships, which she does talk about, but takes it a lot deeper when you really think about what matchmaking can do is connecting people together across all sorts of ways. It's not just in that, you know, one-on-one relationship, but also connections. And she takes it further as far as the way in which she's used that, tell people to what she calls network.
And I think really speaks to that deeper meaning of connection we've been talking about through the podcast.
Maybe matchmaking should be one of your leverage practices.
practices.
Because I've always been a matchmaker.
That's interesting.
Personally, you know, I'm actually responsible for basically 3 marriages, no divorces. but I also feel that way professionally, that I've always, and whether that's translated in connecting that sole practitioner in San Francisco to our labor union to work together to, you know, have a successful outcome with the flight attendant wait litigation, or whether it's helping mentor another employee or other women in the field, keeping my ear out for positions for them. I guess people would call that networking more than matchmaking, but it's really the same set of skills.
So what I have loved since we've talked to Nancy and she used that word matchmaking is just really being more lighthearted to think about connection, because bringing people together, if we kind of put on the matchmaking lens, and let's say you were trying to get a couple together, for instance, like she talked about, but if you were really thinking about that, requires respectfully having 2 people come together, or, you know, matchmaking 2 couples, 3 couples, 4 couples. So it's helped me to really think about being more real and more honest and thinking they are authentic people. I'm an authentic person. How do we bring that together in a new kind of connection? It's more lighthearted. It's more fun. It's a better way to think of it versus roaming around a room, handing out business cards, and using connection for some kind of deeper seated manipulation. I think people can really see through that.
Yeah. And, you know, as we've stated before, and some of the things that we've worked on, is that really when you build those respectful relationships, it brings more power to you. And what we want to do is be able to build and grow influence. And, you know, that is really one way to do it. And, you know, connection doesn't occur unless you bring the real you to the party. So while we usually end our podcast in asking a powerful question, what we want to do is give you a challenge. So the next time you are, maybe it's a social event or in a place where you are not as familiar with the people around you, just think about really working hard to consider how you can build a more meaningful or deep connection with at least 1 or 2 other people.
So we really appreciate everyone that listened into this podcast, and to think through with us what it means to have deeper connections that can really help to accelerate your influence. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. We hope you'll do it again. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.